This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Living Green. I'm your host, Meredith Medland, and I'm delighted today to put you right behind the scenes of people who make podcasts just like me. I want to introduce you to Carolyn Parr and Irv Weinberg, who have a podcast called America the Green, which you can also find in iTunes. And today, we're going to talk about what the role of media is in this whole green movement. We're going to learn lots of wonderful things about Irv, who is incredibly handsome, witty. He's an avid organic gardener, a writer and blogger for green companies. He's, of course, the family cook because the two of them live together. And we're going to learn about Carolyn and specifically talk to her about her wilderness fast retreat in New Mexico. And, of course, they have two great children, so as they look forward into what's going on with our nation, of course, they've got their wonderful kids in mind. But what you need to know today is a little bit more about America the Green. So each week from their home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Carolyn and Irv speak with lots of green business leaders, local community activists, and forward thinkers, of course, from sea to shining sea, so that they can create positive change in the world. America the Green is a little bit different than Living Green because it's a lot more based on the education standpoint. And if you've listened to this podcast before, you know that my focus is to illuminate the psychology of ecology so that when you're listening today, our focus is really on pulling out the attitudes and beliefs and behaviors that both Irv and Carolyn bring to the table.
You know, Carolyn and I always believe in just doing it in a gentle way. You know, we don't believe in the activist issue with people. So our whole thing is inclusion in every way.
Being green is a natural expression. Doing those outward things for the environment, for Mother Earth, is an outward expression of something that's happening on the inside.
We realized that if we could educate people, everyone, in the movement, that people would make a choice, and we have known from our own research that people say they will do more if they only knew what to do. So that's how we feel the role of technology plays into that.
Paul Hawkins, for example, we had him on our show, activist. He was incredibly hopeful about this movement, this green movement, which is the largest unnamed movement, as he called it, 1 to 2 million businesses, companies that don't even know about each other that are going out and doing something for environment, for social issues.
We actually come from New York City and we love the big cities. You can still look up at the sky. You can still see a bird. You can still walk through the park. You can take a moment. You can, hey, bring your lunch, but bring the bag.
Welcome to the show. Hi, guys.
Well, thank you for having us.
What does it feel like being on the other side of the mic?
I'm telling you, I'm not sweating as much.
I'm sweating more.
Exactly. So when you're choosing guests for your show, how do you go about doing that?
Well, with America the Green, our focus really is on bringing green to the mainstream, and we take a look at a broad spectrum of guests and topics, such as one of our favorite shows was Green Weddings, How to Green Up Your Wedding. We just did a show recently on green funerals. And we talk about global warming. So we look at the wide spectrum of everyday activities that we do as Americans, and we talk to experts or authors or leaders in the field on how to green up their lives that way. So what we call green streaming of America. So, and also I take a personal interest. If it excites me, I give them a call.
Excellent. What are you doing in your life to be part of the movement?
Well, we have lived a green lifestyle for many, many years. In fact, the home we live in is a
totally green structure. It has no paint in it. It has no glue. It has no carpet. It's completely green. We've been eating green way before many people did. We were part of the organic movement for many years. So basically what happened, Meredith, was we followed our lifestyle not only into our business but into the show as well. So this is not something we've just kind of come to. It's grown out of the things we have lived with and been interested in with our whole life.
So you've transitioned, it sounds like, outside of some of the more standard ways to go green, which is, you know, your household chemicals and your food and your habits and living simply, and you're kind of at the next level, let's say. So what are the changes that are occurring in your consciousness as you become more sustainable?
Well, I mean, and that's a great question. Mostly it's the spreading of the word. So we feel like we're evangelists in this movement. We have brought a lot of people in our family and our friendships and our just our general relationships into the green movement. And one of the favorite things we did when we lived in Connecticut, we had friends that were anything but green, but we introduced them to organic milk, and then from there they went to organic products. And it's been really great to, like, educate people. And you know, Carolyn and I always believe in just doing it in a gentle way. You know, we don't believe in the activist issue with people. So our whole thing is inclusion in every way. So whatever we can do to bring people into the fold, we feel that's doing something.
And also, I just want to say that I think being green is an inside job rather than an outside job. I mean, Irv said a lot of things that you can do in your life, you know, change a light bulb or, you know, use non-toxic paints. But it's really a development of a consciousness. It's just raising the consciousness. And when you raise the consciousness of yourself, whether it's through spirituality, meditation, yoga, or whatever your spiritual beliefs are, being green is a natural expression. Doing those outward things for the environment, for Mother Earth, is an outward expression of something that's happening on the inside.
When you think of your children and the life that they're being ushered into, what kind of vision do you hold for our future?
Well, I mean, our everything about what we do is really based on that. You know, there's the seventh generation concept of leaving the planet in a good shape for the ones that come after, and actually our concerns are for our children, and we bring them into it. It's all part of the way, you know, we live our life. They understand what we're doing, they understand why, and you know, we're very fortunate. We live in a physically green environment, even when we look outside our window, and I'm a big gardener, and we believe in being part of nature. We hike a lot. We bring our kids into nature whenever possible, whenever we can. And we're also believers in sort of a more old-fashioned lifestyle. It's just involving ourselves and our kids in the natural world, because when you get out into nature, when you get your hands dirty, when you watch a plant grow that you have put in the ground, You care more about it, and then it becomes real. It's not theoretical, it's actual.
Mm. I was interviewing Richard Louvre, who wrote No Child Left Behind, in episode 2, and he spoke a lot about the importance of being outside in nature. And I live in Santa Barbara and love to get in the ocean, and I completely agree. So one of the things I'd like the people, our listeners, to know about the two of you is that you actually have a background in advertising and marketing. So, Irv, you've been at Young and Rubicam and Gray Advertising in New York City, and the two of you also have a marketing company. And, Carolyn, your expertise has been more as a copywriter and also working in some nonprofit organizations. So you're coming from access to and involvement in Fortune 500 marketing. So given that experience combined now with, it sounds like you live in a pretty incredible home. I mean, what you explained, that's unique and different. What do you think the role of technology is in the spiritual component of this new ecology movement? Podcasts are growing. Audiences are growing in podcasts. But if our listeners are listening to a podcast, they're probably pretty dialed into technology. So what I'm interested in is,
you understand the marketing and the behavioral targeting that's available through online advertising and also through new forms of media coming online. And I'm curious, as you look at your children growing and you've got them in this ecologically sound environment, what does the role of technology play in their evolution as it relates to the ecology movement?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that technology is not a bad thing. It's actually a great thing. And the dissemination of information, the speed at which you can retrieve information today, the way, I mean, take your podcast as well as ours. We started this because we felt, what can we do in this world to make it a better, greener place? And short of all the things that you do that are obvious, recycle, live carefully, the impetus for our own show was to get the word out. And then we realized that if we could educate people, everyone in the movement, that people would make a choice. And we have known from our own research that people say they will do more if they only knew what to do. So that's how we feel the role of technology plays into that.
Yeah, and Meredith, you said specifically our children. We balance technology in our house. I mean, my children do not go on during school time. They're not on the computer, and they're not watching TV during the week. I mean, that's just something that we do in the house so that they can have more interaction with the human values and nature. However, my son is 14. He has an iMac computer, and he's very interested in editing and technology, and we kind of weave that into our lives. I think it's really important to have a balance between the two. I think what's happening with the new media and these social communities are remarkable, and the kids are just picking up so quickly. But for me, it's really important that my children and all children don't get so technologically entrenched that they lose touch with, you know, with a pine cone.
Yeah.
Right, the real world.
Yeah, exactly. So we are really careful about the balance. They pick it up in a second. I don't believe the thought that, oh, well, they have to at 3, at 4, at 5, they have to be on the computer because they got to learn now. You know what? My son didn't start really until I think it was 10 or 11, even going near a computer, and he is a whiz right now. It was really important in the early ages of our children, to really have them without all of that kind of media hitting them all the time, and so that they could really develop their own imagination and their own thinking, abstract thinking.
What do you think the role of media will be in their lives in the next 15 years?
Well, I think the role for all of us is going to be information. Now, the question is going to be, how do we make that information be positive? I think that there's an onslaught today, 24-hour news barrage of all different things coming at you all the time. And I think that because of that, we should, we should use the tools that are available to us. And I think that there is more, perhaps a more conscious way to do things. And you know, it's like any parent has the same responsibility. You make choices, and you kind of guide your kids through it. Like some of my most enjoyable evenings that I spend with my son, Zach, who's 14, who's a film person, is to sit with him and to analyze good film and what makes it good. And we have great conversations about cutting techniques and, you know, scenes and writing and screenplays. And I have to say, he did his first film that he did was in the Santa Fe Teenage Film Festival. And when I saw his name go up in lights, that he had written the script for this, I was so thrilled I could barely sit still. So that's how we see media. We're media people. We think media is a good thing when it's used in a good way.
And another comment there is that I think the internet and being able to find the information you want, not necessarily delivered by the big five stations and the big media companies. Right now, everyone has a voice. Everyone can speak up. Look, you have a podcast here, Meredith, right? And so do I. that, and you can do it out of your home. You can do it out of your bedroom if you want to, and it gets out there to millions of people. So the role of media is really about, to me, I mean, it's listening to the people more than ever, I believe.
Yeah, and I'd like to add on that, because what Carolyn said is really what I think is the most remarkable part of the new media, is that we all have an equal voice. If your content is good, if your information is good, you can get listened to. Like when we started our podcast, the first moment we had it, we had like six people that were listening to it. We were so excited about that. Like, where did they come from? And now we are reaching mega thousands of people around the world that we are telling us, you guys have impacted us, and we are like beside ourselves with happiness about that.
Yes, and thank you, iTunes, for helping that happen.
Yeah, isn't that delightful? It's been so fun to get feedback from our listeners. I had a listener email me about an interview I did with Paul Stamets that is featured in the 11th Hour, Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie.
Yes.
You know, his whole thing is around mycelium and mushroom consciousness. And he was saying he was so excited to get in touch with Paul, and he wanted to get a sample of one of the things he'd written. So I called Paul and said, hey, I've got a listener that's interested, and the two of them have connected. And it really, for me, media is a form of connecting people to the information that they need as quickly as we can. And so if you choose to believe that, what is the most important information that you know that's being spoken about in the inner circles of the people who are your close friends and family about future forecasting? What are those intimate secrets?
Well, it depends on who you speak to. If it's a scientist or an engineer, we have a lot of friends of ours who are in renewable energy, we get a grim story. Frankly, I have a good friend, Mark Sardella. Hi, Mark, if you're listening. He's out in California, and he had a company called Local Energy, and really about bringing renewable energy right into the local communities. He's a really smart guy, but every time we talk to him, I get depressed, because he's like, we've already tapped our renewable, energy sources, and if we don't do something now, actually, he thought, if we didn't do something 20 years ago, we were going to be in trouble. Then if I speak to some of my friends who are more in the consciousness area, spirituality, psychology, there's a whole different story. There's a hopeful one. Paul Hawkins, for example, we had him on our show, activist. He was incredibly hopeful about this movement, this green movement, which is the largest unnamed movement, as he called it, 1 to 2 million businesses, companies that don't even know about each other that are going out and doing something for environment, for social issues. So I can't say that there's one specific or overriding belief. It really depends on the individual and the group that you speak to. Irv, what do you think of?
Well, I mean, you know, we just spent some time on Friday with a very knowledgeable man in the energy field, and his philosophy really moved me. It was like, it's about cooperation. That's what I think is happening. You know, the environmental movement has polarized a number of people, like the politics in the country have right now, but his notion was really right on to me. He was saying it's about, you don't have to adopt other people's beliefs, but we all have to work with each other. So I think what you're going to start to see is a movement forming that is going to be about us all cooperating to take the realities of the situation and say, what can we really do about it, to work with the systems and make the improvements that go along the way. But, in fact, we interviewed a woman yesterday who is Republicans for Environmental Protection, and they're a subgroup within the Republican Party pushing the party back to their environmental roots, which began with Teddy Roosevelt. So that was, like, really interesting because, well, again, Meredith, the thing that Carolyn and I are the most committed to is inclusion in everybody. We're also into making it happen so that everybody can take part in it. So it's not like the problem is so overwhelming that I just can't deal with it. What we're suggesting to everyone is that there are small, simple, everyday steps that we can all make to improve everything. And then when people realize they're making forward progress, then I think you're going to get to a situation where people say, hey, we can really solve this problem. Let's get together and do it.
Yeah, so you see what side of the fence we're on.
Well, I heard a few things that I wanted to pull out for our listeners that are kind of action items. So the first is, my experience is if I write down what's working in my life, particularly in whatever domain there is worry in, so if that's in, oh my goodness, what's happening with the planet, what's the role of technology, what do we do with RDIF chips or RFID chips, what do we do, what's going on here, sort of frenetic from speaking to the, let's say, the doomsday crowd, really focusing on what's working in my life and how much am I getting out into nature and what's my connection to the divine or to my internal intelligence like, and really creating a list. And what that does is put my beliefs about what's happening in my reality down on paper in a way that I can see them. So I hear that from you. The second thing that I also wanted to go back to is the episode where you interviewed Paul Hawken. Now, if you haven't read Blessed Unrest, that's Paul's new book, and Paul spoke at Biomimicry, the digital be-in, which was a podcast that we did where we interviewed Larry Harvey there. And the key that Paul always says, whether he's speaking at the TED conference, which is technology, entertainment, and design, or wherever he is that there are so many organizations and people in the world who are committed to a very, very similar thing, and it's uniting all of us together and saying, hey, we're saying the same word, we're living in the same space, we want the same vision, and it's taking place and it's coming through independent media. And what you see on the news or in the newspaper is really just one perspective, and it's actually not even that true. So let's take a look at what's happening in our podcasts and our vidcasts and our blogger environment and see another version of truth.
Amen.
Yeah.
Two
true.
Pieces to illuminate. Now, that being said, I am so completely in alignment with that philosophy because everywhere I go, my experiences, people are moving toward wholeness and goodness and love and planetary, you know, their people are aligned. However, there are conversations that I've been engaged in, and these are the sort of 2, 3 a.m. dinner party conversations, and it's around what happens with the couple in Florida getting chips put in them, or the clubs in London where now you can get a chip implant that has your ATM card or your MasterCard as well as your driver's license information. And I should say, just for our listeners and for my credibility, that I don't have an article to cite on the clubs in London. So please email me one if you do. I haven't done my research about that, but it's come up probably 7 times in my conversations over the last, a lot in the last couple weeks, but it's something I'd heard about probably a year ago. So there is also this kind of thing to look at, if you want to make a metaphor to consciousness, sort of this disease in this the self or the whole of our community, of this tracking or reaching consumers through marketing, or, hey, what data is being collected and where is that all going? And specifically, the chipping is what I'm hearing environmental activists start getting really nervous about. And I'm wondering if you have any opinions or ideas on that.
You know what? I'm into privacy issues. I don't that's something that actually concerns me, and I understand that there is potentially a good side to that. For instance, if your child is ever missing and things like that. But I don't like the invasion or the overmining of data. I think that those things have a lot of potential for abuse. And to me, each person's privacy and business and where they go and what they do really is their own business. So that issue concerns me. I just feel that we have to be careful how much power as individuals we give away to a greater entity, whether it be the government or corporate interests. You know, I know that if you shop in a store, you use an ATM, and you can be monitored on what you buy, how often you buy it, and all that data is something that it's really no one's business anymore, what brand of toothpaste you buy or how often you get cereal. So I just think these are things, like everything else, you can give up too much liberty, and then the fight to get it back is really monumental.
Well, these are good issues that we're touching on, and listeners, if you're interested in them, I encourage you to do your research and engage in the conversations about the things that you're afraid of so that the education you receive will give you freedom. When we come back from the break, Carolyn, we're going to talk to you about some of the freedom that you received in the desert. And Irv, we're going to talk to you about some of the fabulous organic recipes you have and the things that you like to write most about. Thanks so much for listening to Living Green.
Listen to Living Dialogues, thought leaders in transforming ourselves and our global community, with Duncan Campbell, visionary conversationalist, bringing you the best in new paradigm thinking on personallifemedia.com.
Special thanks to our sponsors. My name is Meredith Medland, and again, you're listening to Living Green, and we're here with Carolyn and Irv, who also have a podcast called America the Green. And Carolyn, let's take a little journey outside of technology and talk to you about what it's been like being in the desert environment and going on your wilderness fast retreat in New Mexico.
Yeah, that was made big changes in my life. Going out on the land solo, without food, and carrying whatever you are going to bring with you on your back, no more, no less. I took some time to prepare for that. We went out with a group, but we were solo in our time out there. And what happened was a lot of fears before going out there arose in me, and those are natural fears that people think about, like animals. Or, you know, out in New Mexico, we got mountain lions and bobcats and coyotes. And so it was a really wonderful, I feel, purification to think about those things and then to release them. And this actually happened before I started America the Green, but influenced my dedication to America the Green by being out on the land in that way. And for me, what happened was took my fears away was the thought and the belief that I was going to be protected. And what came to me in meditation was in the belly of the mother. And actually, that chokes me up even when I say it all these years later. And being out there on the land, when I was finally there, everything, all those fears just left. It was just being so in tune with what was around me and getting clear and being fed by other resources. So that's why I think everybody, Democratic, Republican, no matter who you are, if they got out on the land for any period of time, I think we'd all be green.
Oh, I love it.
Maybe we'll just have a really big wilderness retreat for the...
Hey, I'm headed out there. We're going to be filming and doing shows from Burning Man in Nevada, so definitely about getting out there. But what I do want to say is illustrate the point you just made, which is the education that's available to us through the internet, through podcasts, through quick search, all this awesome stuff that I'm so grateful for, is equally as valuable as the information available to us through our internal intelligence, which only comes in times of quiet when listening is occurring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the information that we get over the net in books, they're great, but it really usually comes through a mental expression. When you do something like that and going out, whether it's out on the land, or people have practices that they do, inner practices they do, it really goes beyond the mind and gets to a very visceral level, a level that goes beyond our spiritual, emotional. It takes the whole body in, all the bodies. Mental, spiritual, emotional, all together, kind of come together in those places. So, the internet is a great way to start. It can move people and it can create an impetus for change. But for me, the real guts of it is when you're out there. For instance, yesterday when we interviewed the woman, Martha Marks, who was the president of the Republicans for Environmental Protection, her impetus was because she would love to go outdoors and photograph bugs and photograph birds, and that was her love. That came from a heart space, and look what she's doing now in, you know, in the Republican Party to really forward the action. So it's the inside and outside that happens here.
Indeed it is. Irv, you spend lots of time outside. You've got your kids, and you have a lifelong interest in environmental issues as well as just this great lifestyle. As you look back over the last 12 months as you've been doing America the Green and other activities, what's the most transformative moment that you've had where you've felt in alignment with the earth and nature?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I mean, one is the nature of the show itself. I mean, we feel so privileged, and I do personally, to be able to, you know, to have a voice in this world and to listen to what's being said and what's being asked. And but I will tell you, the single most transformative experience I've ever had was when we bought our house, and I was, you know, restoring some of the gardens that had been left neglected for a while. And when I looked up, there was a mountain lion standing behind me. And in that moment, I realized, you know, I've always said to people, you never know what your reaction is going to be to something until you're in the moment. And I knew all the things from the websites about what to do if you see one. And instead of overreacting to it, that lion and I just looked at each other for what might have been a moment or a minute, but it seemed like forever. And we looked into each other's eyes, and I sent him a mental signal, which was like, I'm okay, and you're okay, and I'm in your environment, so welcome me into it. And this guy just walked out of my back property like a house cat. And for days afterwards, I was in a heightened experience because I had been one with that thing. And instead of some of my friends in New York said, oh, you should get a gun or you should do this and all of those things. And it was like, no, it was just about the two of us connecting. And I let this guy know that I was not going to be a threat to him and he needn't be a threat to me. So that really transformed
me. I love it. Nature and animals and all sorts of good stuff. We're going to take a break to thank our sponsors. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what there is to do for people who are living the corporate life, going into their offices during the week. And it's great that, you know, I might have access to the beach and you've got this great eco home, but what do people do who are in larger cities and that accessibility isn't quite the same as you and I experience? So we're going to come back, we're going to take a break, thank our sponsors, and we'll cover that right when we come back. Thanks so much, and you're listening to Living Green.
Listen to Beauty Now, the intersection of cosmetic surgery, longevity, and biomedical innovation for confident decisions in preventative aging on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back. My name is Meredith Medland, and we're going to wrap up our show today talking about what you can do if you're not able to get outside right now and how you can increase the goodness that you feel about what's happening with the planet. So, Irv and Carolyn, what do you have to say for the people who are going into their offices today to get them in a frame of mind that keeps them in this sustainability, move the earth forward, everything's going to be okay?
Well, I would say what's a phrase I've begun to use and I like a lot, which is, we are a part of nature. We're not apart from it. So do everything you can. Take a deep breath, and whether you're in a city, and we actually come from New York City and we love the big cities, you can still look up at the sky. You can still see a bird. You can still walk through the park. You can take a moment. You can, hey, bring your lunch, but bring the bag. You know, do whatever you can. I mean, Carolyn, I've seen her do some great things. We were on a beach in Mexico a year ago. She saw some debris on the beach, and she did what I named Echo Beach Combing. She picked up the cans, she took it to a receptacle, and we were able to recycle it. So I think that if you're just aware and you say to yourself, I'm going to do whatever I can, even the smallest thing like picking up a piece of paper on the ground and putting it in a proper place, that is, I think, something you can do all the time. And it's great if that becomes your consciousness and you don't leave it for the next person to do it. That's what I would say.
Yeah, we my children and I have a little game that we play, is that we even when we walk through the parking lots of, you know, Target or wherever, or, you know, the supermarket that we go to, is that we pick up one piece of garbage, you know, and we do it consciously, and just and not to think about, well, that person should have picked it up, why should I? It's just like, it's here, you know, and just throwing it away, and that it connects us back to the goodness of the planet, even when it's paved in a parking lot. A plant on a desk, watering the plant and making that your mantra, you know. Eating foods that are alive, you know. If you're in New York or any of those big cities, if you're in L.A., you know, you can go to places that actually, you know, food that's alive instead of food that's canned or heavily packaged. And just putting that kind of nutrients in your body, and while you're doing it, is really taking a moment and being with the food you're eating instead of just like gobbling it down and having the conversation. So just these kind of inner moments, connecting with what's alive and real, no matter where you live, can bring you back or really bring you back and actually set us all forward to think more green.
Right, and if you're in New York City, go to the 14th Street Green Market. It's one of the great ones. If you're in L.A., go to the farmer's market. Remember that food doesn't grow in a plastic bag, and there's a life force in all of it, and I think what Carolyn said is really great. Appreciate the life force in what you're putting in your body, and believe me, it's going to taste a lot better when you look at it, when you think about it, and then you experience it. You're going to say, wow, that strawberry is good.
And here's another thing that I do, no matter where you live, is that when you go shopping, you know, watch what you buy, that even with the packaging, if there's like secondary packaging, meaning like there's a bottle with another box over it, with a saran wrap thing over that, with an extra little card hanging off of it, all of that is extra packaging that gets chucked, you know. It doesn't really help the environment at all, and it's just more marketing. You know, speaking from a marketing person, it's just more ways to, you know, sell a product. So watching what you buy, even looking, you know, at the package and the ingredients that's in it,
right.
If it's closer to nature, go in that direction.
Yeah, and there's one more thing that it just reminded me of. Many years ago on Thanksgiving, Carolyn and I took our kids. We went and we picked up a bunch of meals, and we took them into New York City in the place where there were a lot of homeless people on the streets. And we had our children hand out meals to people on the streets so that they would understand that they are lucky and have something and there are others that don't. And including your kids in those activities is so great for them. And then you don't have to give them a theoretical lecture about why you should do it. You just do it and you don't make a big deal out of it, and you just say, let's go and do this sharing of what we have to others, and the effect is amazing. And we still talk about the things that we do, and they're simple to do. Pick up, go to the post office and get letters to Santa from neighborhoods that might not have the advantage your does, and fill those requests. It will put a glow in your life that will never dim.
Yeah, that was Port Authority where we did that, Irv, remember?
Yep.
I love it. The primary thing that I'm hearing through the whole show today is around connection, whether that's connecting into the eyes of someone who's receiving a meal from you, getting change at the marketplace or the counter where you're buying food today, to make that connection with the person, with the food, with the land. And I just want to thank our listeners for connecting to the three of us today, and I highly encourage you to check out America the Green I've listened to the podcast with Paul Hawken. I think it's exceptional. I've listened to, you've got some great podcasts around food for people who are interested in some of the resources and changes they can make in their diets. And I'm just so grateful to be connected to the two of you and so grateful that we're in this fantastic digital space and that we get to spend our days this way. So thank you so much for being my guest here on Living Green.
Well, thanks for having us on. It was an honor to be on your show.
Yeah, and thank you for connecting us. You were the great connector today, Meredith.
So
thank you. We are, you know, miles and miles away, and I could feel your big heart here. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Listeners, if you'd like to connect to me, you're welcome to email me personally at meredith@personallifemedia.com. I do return emails. I do write a blog. Check it out. You can go to personallifemedia.com. It's real short excerpts, mainly predictions and things that I see coming down the pipeline. And for text and transcripts, a full transcript of this show and other shows on the personallifemedia.com network, all you need to do is go to personallifemedia.com. Thanks so much for tuning in, and come back and see us next week on Living Green.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com. And now, please enjoy this entertaining clip, recyclable comedy, from our sponsor, Plenty Magazine, plentymag.com.
The North Pacific Litter Vortex. It's a floating collection of non-biodegradable garbage roughly the size of Texas. Ocean currents have brought plastic from all over the world to the North Pacific gyre between Hawaii and California. Billions of plastic bags, soda bottles, and old beach toys spinning slowly in the water and getting larger. No one knows what to do about this growing continent of waste products, so we're opening it as a vacation resort. Imagine floating lazily round and round, working on your tan, enjoying the surf, and watching a seagull trying to eat a bottle cap. And the same mild weather that keeps this plastic mess from blowing apart also guarantees you the perfect vacation. Plus, all the amenities are here. Forgot to pack your toothbrush? Don't worry, we have thousands of them, littered everywhere.
Geez, none of these toothbrushes look too fresh. Maybe I should just... Ooh, this one has Elmo from Sesame Street.
And it's the perfect spot for a romantic getaway.
Oh no, I forgot to get a condom.
That's okay, the floor is made out of them. Ooh, this one has Elmo from Sesame Street.
So take your vacation at the North Pacific Litter Vortex. You'll love it so much, we know you'll leave a little of yourself there. Heck, you already have.
For more recyclable comedy, go to plentymag.com.